You're with James Breslow on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back to the second hour of the James Breslow Show. We're going to be talking a bit about Roe v. Wade being overturned today. Earth-shaking day, I should say, here in America, being felt probably around the world. We're going to talk to Professor Nicholas Giordano. He is a professor of political science and the host of the PAS Report podcast, which is a very impressive podcast that I recommend that everybody check out. We'll be covering that and maybe talking a bit about the war in Ukraine. First, my take on the Roe v. Wade decision. This is going to make things very interesting this political season as the issue gets tossed back to the states or potentially to the federal government. Biden's already coming out and saying that he wants a federal law protecting a woman's right to an abortion. What that law would look like would be essentially prohibiting states from putting in place any restrictions on abortion, essentially protecting the rights of women. I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but I'm not sure that that federal law would be constitutional for the federal government to dictate that states may not regulate abortion. That does not sound constitutional to me. Not to mention, he's got no chance of getting it passed. So this is going to go back to the states. I believe there's about 12 states that have what they call trigger laws, which means that upon the overturning of Roe v. Wade, which happened this morning, bans on abortion immediately go into effect. A lot of states, including Texas and states in the Southeast, have that in place. So presumably, as we speak, abortion now banned in about 12 states in the U.S. and many other states perhaps going to follow it. Republican candidates now have to answer to the question of what should the law be. Before, it used to always be, well, I'm pro-life, but what can you do? Roe v. Wade, nothing can be done. Well, now there is no Roe v. Wade. So Republican candidates have to answer that are pro-life. Do you truly favor an absolute 100% ban on all abortions, rape, incest, etc., no exceptions? And there's a lot of pressure on Republican candidates to say, yes, absolute ban, because the true pro-lifers are difficult to please in that regard. In my view, and I consider myself a conservative, I don't support such a ban. And here's my thoughts on it. Of course, life begins at conception. This is true both from a biological and a logical perspective. The so-called viability of a fetus, which means when it can survive outside the womb, is an arbitrary marker which continues to change with modern medicine. Is there any doubt that one day medicine will allow a fetus to survive outside the womb at virtually any time? So, because it is a life, the issue is not just about a woman's body. There are two bodies involved. We must respect both. Though it is a life, we recognize that in its earliest stages, this life is very much in doubt. Often a fertilized egg does not embed in the uterus. Of those which do, as many as 15% miscarry. However, after 10 to 12 weeks, miscarriage becomes very rare. We should acknowledge that polling shows that people generally favor a woman's right to choose with reasonable restrictions. The people's representatives, while not bound by public opinion, must give it significant consideration. We also must recognize that banning all abortions is not practical. Making it illegal will not stop it. Just as with other things that are made illegal, from drugs to gambling to prostitution, an underground black market develops for anything made illegal. In the case of abortion, this can be dangerous. Because it is a life, abortion must be early and rare. A woman should be required to make a decision as soon as possible upon learning that she is pregnant. Permitting abortion of an embryo, but not a fetus, strikes the right balance, in my view. An embryo becomes a fetus in approximately the ninth week, when the brain, heart, lungs, internal organs, and arms and legs have been formed. This allows more than enough time for a decision to be made. Allowing the abortion of a fetus shocks the conscience of most people when shown what it looks like. That is usually the benchmark in determining what should be illegal. Other reasonable restrictions should also be in place, like requiring parental consent for minors and a sonogram to ensure the woman's decision is fully informed. Again, this is because it is a life, and thus it is not only about a woman's body. That's my take on TNT Radio.
World News reported right.
I try to find news outlets that aren't too biased.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we are back, and hopefully we've got in the line Professor Nicholas Giordano. Are you there?
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you. Please tell me that you're related to the Giordano family that owns the pizza places in Chicago.
I am not. Sorry to disappoint, but Giordano's like the Smith of Italians.
Okay. So much for my my discounted pizzas going forward. Are you familiar with that pizza chain, though?
No, I'm not. No free pizza for you. I'm based in New York, so we have a competition with Chicago over who has better pizza.
Yeah, well, I actually give a slight nod to New York, I have to say. However, when in Chicago, make sure you go to Giordano's, because I do think it is far and away the best Chicago pizza. And it's kind of some misconceptions about Chicago pizza. People think of it as being very thick and therefore a thick crust. It really isn't a thick crust. It's more almost like a lasagna in that you've got thin crust on the bottom, thin up the sides, and then it's just filled with tons of cheese in the middle, basically. You have one slice of it and you're pretty much done. But it's delicious.
And that's what matters in the end, right? It's got to taste good.
Yeah. And well, if I've ever told you about the worst pizza I've ever had, it was delicious. So that'll give you an idea of my views on pizza. Anyway, you're not here to talk pizza. We've got earth-shaking news today. The decision on Roe v. Wade, I definitely want to get your thoughts on that. And perhaps there's a zillion angles you could take on it, but perhaps the angle we could discuss is the timing of this, considering the midterm elections coming up in November. Just like a couple of years ago, we had a surprise that came in the name of COVID that certainly disrupted Trump's reelection prospects, probably would have been reelected, but for COVID. Economy was going extremely well at the time, et cetera. And then suddenly, boom, everything shut down. So that was the 2020 surprise. And now the 2022 surprise is the Roe v. Wade decision. And I do think, well, clearly you already see coming out of the left, they are positioning this. Biden gave a speech today about it. And the whole thing was positioning it that we now need a federal law passed, and the only way to get a federal law passed is you need to elect Democrats, basically. So they finally found their 2022 issue, because but for abortion, they basically got nothing. How do you see this issue playing into the elections later this year?
Well, I find it really interesting, because when you look at the abortion debate and what President Biden's now saying is he wants to see pieces of legislation. We all know legislation's not getting approved of this magnitude in an election year. It's just not going to happen. And so the Democrats are hoping that this energizes their base to get them to come out and vote, because let's face it, the Democrats are largely depressed when it comes to current conditions. But the problem that I think Democrats are going to find is that abortion, it actually impacts relatively few people. So while a whole host of Americans do have an opinion on abortion, the reality is it only affects about 1% of people that actually go out and get abortions, where people filling up their gas tanks, it affects a lot more of them. And people's personal economies are going to matter much more in the election than the abortion issue, especially considering that this abortion decision comes out today, as opposed to the Supreme Court decisions that come out in October.
Yeah. However, you will have with these trigger laws, we're in June right now. So we're going to see a good number of months between now and November where we see this play out, these bans on abortion, complete bans. I think some of it even, you know, incest and rape, et cetera. I think we're going to be seeing stories from these states that could move the needle for people, because even though it might technically only affect 1%, you know, people are pretty passionate in general about this issue. I've got some friends on the left who've become, disassociated with the Democrat Party in light of all the stuff that's been happening. But when they heard about this, you go, oh, no, women's right to choose. No, I'm going to vote Democrat because, you know, there's no way I'm going to support banning the right to choose.
Well, I think Republicans, and that's where they're going to stumble most when it does come to the question about rape and incest and whether abortion should be completely banned in those circumstances. That's where you're going to start to see some Republican weakness. But as a whole, I don't anticipate too many states doing that. I know some of the states have these trigger laws in place. I do think that there's going to be a lot of discussion about the trigger laws over the course of the next 30 days. States may refine some of their abortion laws. But I think on the totality of it, I think the majority of states are going to just put in restrictions. They're going to go with the 15 weeks, which is like most of Europe, actually, which is interesting. But they'll go with the 15 weeks. They may go with the heartbeat bill, where if you want an abortion, you got to watch a sonogram first, listen to the heartbeat, make a decision based on all the information. I think states like New York and California, nothing is changing, so it's not going to have any real impact in those states. And so it's going to be interesting to see how it starts to impact congressional districts, but the swing districts. You know, over the course of the last several decades, we've seen so much gerrymandering that a lot of districts are either solidly red or solidly blue. The swing districts is where we're going to see these debates. And it's going to be interesting to see the polling starting next month on whether or not people's opinions are changing. So Republicans were, I believe, in the last poll, +4, +5 in the generic congressional races. And we'll see if that maintains. Now, if it starts to change, and let's say it starts to either get even or Democrats even start leading, I'll be interested seeing the Republican messaging. But this certainly is going to energize the left to a certain degree.
Well, yeah. And going back to these states, I haven't dissected each one of them that have got these trigger laws, but let's just focus on them for a second, which is complete ban on abortion. I don't know if those states have exceptions for rape and incest or not. I think I know for sure that some of them do not have that exception. But even if there is, those are the only exceptions. So otherwise, abortion absolutely prohibited. I'd be surprised if you saw those laws amended between now and November to change to, you know, what you're talking about, which is, you know, some reasonable amount of time for it. So,
well, and some of those trigger laws, it actually states that you have to have a 30-day window to make any changes to the law.
Okay. So, you know, we're going to be heading into November, likely with at least 12 states having essentially complete bans on abortion, where women are leaving the state to go to neighboring states to get abortions. And you're going to have the Democrats saying that, we need some federal protections here. So it becomes an issue, an electoral issue, not just in those 12 states, but in every state. You know, it's on the ballot, as they love to say, but it truly will be in all these congressional races. Abortion, right to choose, will be on the ballot, and people are going to be voting on whether or not these states should be allowed to have complete bans on abortion.
I agree with that, but I also think it will motivate conservatives as well to get out to the polls. And so we're going to look at independents and see how they end up falling on this issue. But once again, I think overall people's personal economies is going to matter most in this election. So while I don't expect as big of a red wave because of the abortion issue, I still expect Republicans to dominate in the November election cycle if the economy stays the same, which there's no signs of it reversing course or this administration reversing course.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, of course, is, okay, there's the Republican position, and then there's what's the Democrat position. They always overplay their hand on this kind of stuff. And when you find out, okay, guys, well, tell us, what exactly are you talking about as far as this federal law that you want to limit the ability of states to restrict choice? What are you in favor of? If you look to California, they've got a pending bill right now that would allow abortion right up until the date of delivery. It specifically involves a woman's ability to forget what term they use for it, but effectively we're talking about self-abort, and it prohibits there being any investigation, any criminal investigation into a woman who self-aborts right up until the day of delivery. By the way, self-aborting essentially means that presumably the baby winds up in a dumpster. That's a bill pending. I think it may have even already passed the assembly here in California. So that's where Democrats are on abortion.
Well, in New York, we actually have a law that pretty much can justify abortion up until the moment of birth, as long as the doctor signs off and can say that there's a health reason. They don't have to be specific. As long as they say it's a health reason, then the parent could choose to abort that baby up until the moment of birth. And so I think that partly why we saw this decision by the Supreme Court is because of how radical and how far left the Democrats have gone when it comes to abortion, talking about partial birth abortion, talking about even post-birth abortions with former Governor Northam in Virginia. I think that they're the ones that galvanized this issue, where most Republicans, I would say, accepted the fact that Roe v. Wade wasn't going to be overturned. Conservatives were constantly fighting to have it overturned. Well, now they got their moment in the spotlight. They were able to get it overturned. And I think it's because Democrats went too far when it came to the abortion debate.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's where I'd like to see the Republican Party be the reasonable ones at the table. Don't be the extremists. Let the Democrats be the extremists and try to defend abortion right up until birth. That's not where people are. You know, when I talk to people, frankly, Republican and Democrat, they're okay with it being restricted to very early. I mean, I'm not sure I've ever had a conversation with someone who's comfortable with unfettered discretion up to viability. That's 6 months. A 6 month pregnant woman, unfettered, free to go get an abortion? What the hell have you been doing for the last 4 months? Why are you deciding now to abort? This decision should be made very early. And I think that's where most people are.
I agree with that. And I think, I mean, I remember when the Democrat platform was safe, legal, and rare. And now it's pretty much on demand whenever you want it and let the taxpayers pay for it. That's how radical it's become. But I agree. Don't play into the Democrats' hand. Don't give them the issue and put the spotlight on them. If they want abortion to be legal, have them explain to the voters the parameters of what is legalized abortion to them. How far would it go? How long would it go? Because you're right. If you look at all the polling, 63% of the Americans say Roe v. Wade shouldn't be overturned, but over 65% believe that there should be severe restrictions on abortion, like 15 weeks, like a heartbeat bill. So Republicans would be smart to play into that dynamic.
Yes, but I believe that there are Republican candidates out there, and I've spoken to them, that are nervous about articulating a position such as the one that I articulated in the opening of, you know, allowed for a limited period of time. And they're afraid of the hard right, the religious right, the pro-lifers, that they believe that if you're pro-life, how can you possibly support any abortion rights whatsoever if you're pro-life? And I don't see the Republicans really responding to that. They duck the question because they're afraid to answer the question.
But that's where Republicans also, in a way, have to be smart and answer it the right way. And I'm not saying there's a right or wrong way, actually. That was a bad phrasing. But they have to make the issue, the central issue in this election, about economics. They can't keep being forced to go to the abortion debate. So they need to articulate a position. You're not going to satisfy everyone, but you have to satisfy. We're moving into the general in a lot of these election races. The primaries are going to be over in a few weeks in most states. And listen, politics is politics. When you're in a primary, you run to your base. When you're in a general election, you slightly moderate your positions to a certain degree in order to win over more people, to win over those independents. And that's where Republicans have to balance it out.
Okay, so when they're asked the question, what is your position on abortion rights and should it be permitted or not, you know, what should Republicans say? Because a lot of them try, well, still, they try to, I mean, and one answer could be duck the question. I don't personally like that because I want to know what the candidate truly believes. But, you know, these days, you know, politicians love to avoid answering questions. But A, should they answer the question? And B, if they do, what should they say?
Well, politicians could speak for 20 minutes and still, after walking away from that speech, you have no idea what they were talking about or what they were saying. But should they answer the question or should they duck it? No, they should answer the question. I mean, we elect these people to represent us. And so we should know what their views are. And if they should be honest, I mean, if they believe that no abortions under any circumstances, the voters have a right to know that. And that's their beliefs. And there's nothing wrong with that. I would say that you need to include the exceptions for rape and incest. I believe that's important. As far as whether or not there should be limits, 15-week limits, that's going to be up to every Republican political office holder, the ones that are running for these offices, to decide for themselves and be honest with the voters. I am someone that believes that they could actually walk a fine line. They could say that they support abortion and rape and incest, and they could say that they're against abortion in other ways. In a lot of states, in a lot of congressional districts, they'll still win.
Yeah. All right. We got to take a break. We're talking to Professor Nicholas Giordano. We're going to keep talking on Roe v. Wade and maybe touch on the war in Ukraine and a couple other hot button political items like guns. You're listening to The James Breslow Show on TNT Radio.
Patrick Henningsen on TNT Radio.
And it is the most incredible situation to have a U.S. president who hasn't even done 2 years in office and already his own party is throwing him under the bus. The media is throwing him under the bus. CNN is even throwing this Democratic president under the bus, who is meant to be the sort of messiah figure, actually not messiah figure, more like Moses, I guess. But before the 2020 election, they're saying Biden's going to fix America. Not that America was particularly broken, although it has its deep faults. There's no doubt about that. But Biden, as he's come in, Joe Biden, the geriatric wonder, has not really fixed anything, but seems to have made everything worse. Racial tension is worse. Social disparity is worse. The economy is in free fall. There's nothing good coming out of this White House. And so they're starting to throw him under the bus.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Wokeness is infiltrating churches and people don't really know what's hitting them.
Critical race theory assumes that racism is everywhere, it is in everything. These ideologies have crept into the church.
I have grown up with this invisible kind of bag of privilege.
And I know, as a white pastor, I have blind spots.
Reparations fits into the scope of the gospel.
It's a racist worldview. You're swimming in racism.
The social justice warriors say, if you're white, you are racist. And if you say that you are not a racist, then you have to be a white supremacist.
I see within evangelicalism today an attack on the very gospel itself.
Social justice doesn't have to do with justice, it has to do with Marxism.
Wokeness is now the dominant academic paradigm on many university and college campuses.
Many of our Christian universities have fallen prey.
I went to an all-black school, raised in a black context. Everything was oppression. White people are racist, cops can't be trusted, and this world is not for us, it's against us. We felt like the government owed us. I have a family, I have children, and I don't have a job. I was just, it was at the darkest point in my life.
Because I was white, would we have to divorce and separate due to my skin color?
Christianity enables people to find forgiveness and redemption. However, Marxism is completely vindictive.
There is no redeemer and there is no redemption in the religion of anti-racism.
I believe that the evangelical church today is going to have to make a decision. Are we going to submit to the culture, or are we going to remain true to the faith and take the consequences.
How the left is stealing your church. The invasion of the gospel of woke. At salemnow.com.
If you want the jibby jab, all right, enough, then you've come to the wrong station. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back, everybody, to the James Breslow program. We are talking to Professor Nicholas Giordano about everything U.S. politics. He's got a fabulous podcast that everybody should check out, the PAS Report. You get some great guests on there. How long has that been? That podcast been going?
I've been doing it for about 2 years now, 2.5 years.
And how do you get such great guests? You're just very connected there in New York or what?
No, I just annoy the hell out of them until they agree to come on. Just hound them day in, day out.
Are you in Manhattan?
I'm about 30 minutes outside Manhattan. I'm based on Long Island, so it's not as liberal and as blue as New York City is, but it's not that far off either.
Yeah. Tell us about this Mayor Adams that you've got. We've got a big election coming on up here in Los Angeles. I don't know if you've been following that race, but the LA mayor race is, yeah, super, super interesting. Congresswoman Karen Bass came in first in the primary. So the top two go on to the general, and she beat out billionaire real estate developer Rick Caruso by about 5 points. But the spread is actually much bigger than that because the next three candidates are all hardcore progressives. So you got to assume she gets those votes. So she's up about 60-40 over Caruso, even though he spent about $40 million to her $3 million. So I am very concerned as an LA resident, to say the least, as to what's going to happen in November in LA.
Well, what's always mind-boggling to me about the urban centers is that the Democrats have been in control of most of the major urban centers for the last half century, if not longer. And the quality of life routinely has declined under Democrat leadership. So you would think they would come to a realization that, hey, the conditions in my community are so terrible. You know what? Let me just give the other side a try. It can't be any worse than what's happening today. And I just find it mind-boggling that people will still go with that Democrat machine in the urban centers, given how the urban centers have changed. And we see the same thing in New York City. You look at someone like a Mayor Adams. Now, Mayor Adams actually did try and moderate to a certain degree, New York City level degree, in the election. He wanted to differentiate himself from the far left progressives that were running. And he said some of the right things. However, his actions show that he's all talk and the city's falling apart. So Mayor Adams, I mean, to me, he's an ineffective leader. We see this time and time again, and he's slightly better than de Blasio, but that doesn't say much because de Blasio is probably the worst mayor in the entire country, no matter who you compare him to. De Blasio was absolutely horrible. So it's not saying much, but I'm hoping that people do come to the realization. Listen, I don't pretend that Republicans have all the answers. I criticize Republicans all the time because they surrendered these areas to the Democrats. They don't waste time, money, or resources trying to win people over. They don't listen to people in these communities. And I think that's a problem with the Republican Party. They should be going into these communities, hearing the people's concerns, what their top issues are, not lecturing them on how they should live their lives, but what they care most about. I think that's really important. And if Republicans do that, I do believe that they could make some inroads into these communities. But they've ignored them for so long that the Democrats have a stranglehold on them.
Yeah, I used to say that about Trump, that I thought Trump, he actually did pretty well with minority communities relative to prior Republican presidents. But I think he could have done extremely well if he had reached out to them more and really gone into those communities. I think the black community always loved Trump. You know, they thought Trump was cool.
100% right. And I said that President Trump should be doing rallies in these communities. He doesn't need to get 10, 20, 30,000 people at every rally. If he could get 1,000 people, 2,000 people in a highly urbanized area, a black community, a Hispanic community, that would speak volumes. And the fact that he didn't do it was partly the reason that he didn't win in 2020. That if he could have got more black support, he would have been better off and he probably would have won the election.
Yeah, these handlers want, you know, a bunch of waving flags and to pack the room. So they pick the most Trump-friendly places to hold rallies. But yeah, to your point, you don't need 30, 40,000, just a thousand or two, just to demonstrate that you're there for that community, listening to that community, and the optics are pretty good. We had it
not for nothing. You know, if you're getting a thousand people at a rally in a black neighborhood, that's still 990 more people than Biden gets at his rallies.
Yeah. We had Larry Elder running here last year against Newsom. So here we had a black candidate, but even he wasn't going into the black communities because, you know, to them, he's a borderline Uncle Tom, et cetera, et cetera. And I think he was just afraid of the pushback and the lack of love that he was going to get. But you've got to demonstrate, you know, you are going to be the Uncle Tom candidate unless you can prove that, no, you really do help speak for these people.
Yes. And I remember when he was labeled the black face of white supremacy. And it's funny because I actually give speeches to a lot of black church groups in the city area. And when you go and actually speak to these people and you actually ask them, what are your concerns? So far, I mean, I've been speaking in front of these groups for over 4 years now. Not a single person ever told me, stood up and said, you know, my biggest concern is white supremacy. Not a single one of them. It's always the same thing. Crime, poverty, homelessness, fatherless homes. Those are always the concerns in these communities. And it's really amazing that Republicans haven't gone into them to speak about these issues, to show them policies that would help them, especially when you look at conservative ideas, a conservative agenda that would actually really help these communities. You know, criminal justice reform was preached about by Democrats for 20 years, yet it took a Republican president to actually push through criminal justice reform. And Republicans don't tout that. They don't speak about that. They don't explain how it helps certain communities. And at the same time, how we still have to have law and order.
You're telling me they don't tell you that police brutality is their biggest concern?
No, I've never been to a black church where they said the number one issue, we're afraid of police. Not a single time.
Yet that's what the mainstream media would lead you to believe, that the biggest problem for the black community is an oppressive police force.
Exactly. The people who don't live in these communities, that's the amazing part. And if you look at it, it's when it comes to immigration, when it comes to bail reform, when it comes to a whole host of Democrat policies, they always impact the areas that are already in trouble, that already need help, where the critical infrastructure is already declining, where the schools have already failed, where the infrastructure is collapsing. Yet if you would say that, hey, we should apply these laws and say anyone that's released on bail has to stay in the wealthy elite zip codes, any migrant that crosses off the border has to be resettled in the wealthy elite districts that could afford to take on these people, you'll see how quickly Democrats would change their tune.
Yeah, I think we should rip a page out of their playbook and start saying that we are the party of the black community. We are the party for women. We are the party for LGBT. And then explain, give a couple bullet points as to how you are that party. And by the way, don't be afraid to call the Democrat Party racist, sexist, homophobic, because that's what they are. But they've been playing that game with us for a long time right now. And, you know, you're in a hotbed of it in New York. I'm in a hotbed of it here in Los Angeles. Nobody wants to walk around acknowledging they're a Republican in Los Angeles, because who wants to be called a racist, sexist, or homophobe? In California, and I don't know how well they've done the rest of the world, but probably done pretty well, they've done an amazing job of labeling the Republican Party racist, sexist, and homophobic. And nobody wants to identify with that. So let's start calling them that.
Yeah, I mean, when we look at the parties, to me, it looks like Democrats have abandoned the black and Hispanic community. I mean, if we look over the last several months and Democrat issues, it looks like they've ditched those groups and now they're for the trans group. And that's where they're focusing their time, money, and resources. It's baffling that Republicans in certain areas, they have taken advantage. I will say that we are seeing the poll shift. We are seeing Republicans in certain areas become more engaged. I'm noticing a lot of the young Republican clubs are taking on the leadership and going into these communities. And that's what Republicans have to do. And you're absolutely right. They should adopt the Democrat tactics, because if we look at this shift that has taken place over the last 20 years, it used to be that Republicans, it was about business, it was about the corporate elite. Well, now that shifted. The corporations all back the Democrats. The corporations are in bed with the Democrats. Democrats are the ones that are getting that dark money, not the Republicans. And so Republicans have a real opportunity to get to the average voter, the middle class, the forgotten middle class. And they can make real inroads if they do it right.
Yeah. And I love how the Democrats will call things Republicans propose, such as, new election rules or laws or what have you. And it's Jim Crow. It's Jim Crow on steroids. You guys are the party of Jim Crow. Those are Democrats that passed all of the Jim Crow laws. You guys are the party of slavery. You're the party of the KKK. How these guys have somehow escaped that and made Republicans the racists is just incredible. Very savvy propaganda by them, but we got to turn it on its head.
But it's also because Republicans are pathetic. So if I'm advising a Republican and they're going on, let's say, MSNBC or CNN, and we're talking about voter ID laws, and they say that you just want to suppress Black people from voting, my immediate follow-up would be, I think it's kind of insulting that you say that Black people don't have identification cards because they use Sudafed like the rest of us, right? They get over-the-counter drugs where you have to show a driver's license. They travel like the rest of us. So it's really insulting that you would assume that just because they're Black, they don't have IDs. You'd never see Republicans do that. Yet if they did that, they would make these people look like the fools they are. And it would open the eyes of a lot of those in minority communities, but even just ordinary Democrats. You know, it's the rich, white, liberal elitists that's speaking for the Black and Hispanic communities, and Republicans don't call that out.
Yeah. I mean, look, I hate putting people into groups and categories. It's, you know, totally against what America is supposed to be about. However, at this point, I think the ship has sailed, and we got to start talking in those terms just like they do. Let's hit Mayor Adams a little bit more before the break, and then I want to talk Russia, Ukraine with you. So, he looks to me to be a disaster. Certainly doesn't look like the guy who was running for office. And also, isn't he someone who had switched parties? Wasn't he a Republican at one point?
For a short period of time, he was a Republican, but he wasn't a real Republican. Mayor Adams is someone that he was Brooklyn borough president. And let's just say Brooklyn became the most violent borough out of all five boroughs here in New York City under his leadership. So I was always suspicious of him and his policies. The reality is that you have Mayor Adams that will sit there and fight harder to have drag time story hour than to stop the crime that's occurring on the subway platforms, to stop the homelessness, the increasing homelessness that we're seeing, the tent cities that are popping up on sidewalks.
But by the way, I have to interrupt you. I have to interrupt you and ask, is that a joke or are you being serious about the drag time thing?
No, I'm being serious about it. As a matter of fact, we have one councilwoman here in New York City that actually spoke out about taxpayer-funded drag queen story hours in elementary schools and in libraries. And now the Adams regime is trying to target her, get her stripped of all her council committee seats, and they're really targeting her. So as crime is surging, they want to focus on this, and it's taxpayer funded, where the taxpayer.
Have you done any? Somebody needs to do some investigating into this, or maybe I just need to Google it. But this drag queen story hour that's just kind of come out of nowhere in the past month or so, like, what the hell is this thing? Where is this coming from? Who's putting this on? Why is it putting on? Have you seen any investigation into this?
No, not really. It's $150,000 was spent over the last year and a half given to nonprofit groups to do this. Now, why? I don't know. I can't answer that question. Listen, I don't want any type of sexuality being imposed on children, whether it's straight, gay, I don't care, trans, whatever it is. I mean, kids are innocent. Let them remain innocent as long as possible, especially with the corruption that we have today, the cesspool that exists out there. It's hard enough to raise children. And you got to field questions like this. It's bizarre, yet here's where the funding's going. And it's who's making money off of this? And I think, you have all these powerful conservative groups that have all this money. You would think like they would investigate this to expose who's behind this, who's getting rich off this, and they haven't. To me, it's bizarre. Let's find out who's making money off of this.
I mean, drag queen story hour for our children. First of all, drag queens are not really transgender. So to the extent this is a whole trans thing, yeah, drag queens are guys that dress as women and perform. So I don't know what they think they're accomplishing by doing this for children. It just makes no sense to me. And the fact that you're telling me now that the government is the one spending money on this, just insane.
Well, there's a lot of things that don't make sense to me anymore. Listen, I mean, prior to the coronavirus, I would tell my students, no way would this happen in the United States. The United States would never lock everyone down. They would never force everyone to wear masks. Well, I had to rethink a lot of things when it came once the coronavirus hit, and I'm still rethinking a lot of things today.
Yeah. All right. Well, when we come back, I want to talk about the rift that seems to exist in the Republican Party regarding whether or not to be supporting Ukraine in this war with Russia. We'll be back with Professor Nicholas Giordano on the James Breslow Show, TNT Radio.
You're in luck. You don't like your weather or climate? Pass a law to change it.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Marano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Marano.
ClimateGate Professor Michael Mann, formerly of the United Nations, claims if you don't like the climate, you can just pass a law and change it.
We want to go. We want to prevent the problem from getting worse. And that means decarbonizing our economy rapidly. That means we need legislation. And there's still an opportunity to pass climate legislation this term in Congress.
And there you have it. Michael Mann says, just have your parliament, government, Congress, leaders change the weather by changing the laws. In the Middle Ages, people believed witches could change the weather. Have we really advanced? For the Marano Minute, this is Mark Marano on TNT Radio.
Interview conducted at 10:15, present are Sergeant Jones, PC Clough, Mr. Wall, an uninsulated cavity wall, and his solicitor, Mr. Bent. Do you understand the charges?
I shall be speaking for Mr. Wall on account of him being a pile of bricks.
Right, you're accused of wasting energy, Mr. Wall, and we've got concrete evidence. We know that unfilled cavity walls are responsible for up to a third of all home energy wastage.
We also believe you're involved in a fencing operation.
We're going to throw the book at you.
Okay. Mr. Wall would like to say ouch.
It's criminal to waste energy. To find out how to save up to 25% off your heating bills, visit saveenergy.co.uk or call 0845 727 7200.
We were told that the last presidential election was the most secure election in history.
Nope, not by a long shot.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And we are back on the James Breslow Show talking to Professor Nicholas Giordano about U.S. politics. So Tucker Carlson might be the most widest heard conservative commentator in America today. I know he's got the number one show on cable, and I think it's like literally the number one show, not just number one news show, the number one show on cable. And his take on the Ukraine-Russia conflict has been interesting from the beginning. He was extremely skeptical and kind of mocking the Biden administration when it was suggesting that a Russian invasion was imminent. And then, of course, it happened. It pretty much happened exactly as the U.S. administration had been warning it was going to happen. And then once it did happen, for some reason, I mean, you know, if you remember the news, obviously it was 24/7 coverage of the war, correspondents on the ground, et cetera, generals talking about it and so on. And then Tucker would come on, and he'd have a story about, first of all, sometimes he didn't even make it the number one story. And then when he did, it was about bio labs in Ukraine and the U.S. involvement in bio labs, which is something that Putin had thrown out there as a concern that these bio labs, of course, Putin also said that there's Nazis in Ukraine and that justified his invasion. So, but, you know, Tucker's not the only one. I've run across a number of conservatives that are just very, very skeptical of our involvement in Ukraine and seem to be almost Putin apologists as far as explaining all the things that the West did wrong that caused Putin to do what he did. And it's understandable and borderline justified. Help me make sense of this. What's your take on all that?
Well, it's interesting because I was warning about Russia and what they were doing starting in March of 2021. The writing was already there. I mean, Russia already had close to 100,000 troops on the border of Ukraine. They were putting troops in Belarus. Like, it was clear as day. And a year later, they did the invasion. So the Biden administration, they just started to sound the alarm bells in January, December and January. So it was bizarre to me that they didn't say anything up until December or January, when people like me were actually discussing it. Now, as far as the United States policy and what should it be, well, the problem is that, one, Ukraine is not the beacon of democracy like everyone tries to make it out to be. Ukraine was a highly corrupt country. It's not, I'm not saying that they should have been invaded. They shouldn't have. But they're not a fully democratic country in the way we think of democratic countries. But more importantly, right now is actually a decent situation for the United States. Russia is a natural adversary to the United States. Russia's foreign policy is based on expanding their power and influence around the world. Our foreign policy is based on maintaining our power and influence. So naturally, they conflict with each other. Russia is getting bogged down in the Ukraine. Now, Ukraine's not having this success like the media pretends that they were having. That's why you don't hear about it in the media anymore. But Russia is significantly weaker today than they were prior to February 24th. Even though the ruble is up, yes, I know people will say that, Russia is significantly weaker. And as far as military goes, there were people like me that have overestimated Russia's military capabilities for the last two decades. Well, obviously, Russia's military is not as competent as we thought it was. And given that it's taken Russia this long and given how bogged down they are, it shows that they're having a lot of problems. Now, at the same time, don't forget, we did spend 20 years in Afghanistan to the tune of trillions of dollars. And basically, the Taliban is better armed and equipped today than they were prior to our invasion. So we could mock Russia all we want. At the same time, we have to look internally here in the United States. But as far as what should the United States be doing, one of the things that I have found bizarre throughout the entire conflict is, why are we announcing everything? You want to weaken Russia? Fine, that's a policy we could have. But you don't need to announce the exact weapon systems that we sent over there. You don't need to announce how many of those weapon systems we're sending over there. But more importantly, I think the concern of conservatives like myself is the amount of money that we're sending over there. You know, we've sent to tune of, what, $60 billion so far to the Ukraine. I mean, we say that we couldn't afford a $24 billion wall on the southern border, yet we've given the Ukraine $60 billion. And for what? What's it really going to get us in the end? And I think that's the concern people have. There is no doubt that the United States and Russia do not want to go to war with each other, nor should we go to war with each other. That would be an absolute catastrophe. And yet you have these American politicians that want to keep the war machine going. But nobody ever asked the question, how many wars have we won in the last 70 years? I mean, we've been engaged in war all over the planet, but how many wars have we actually won where we could say this is a definitive victory? And outside of 1991 Desert Storm, where we had clear objectives of what our military was supposed to do, we accomplished those objectives, and then that was it. The war was over. We haven't seen any victories. So we have to sit there and reassess, what should our policy be? And is a war with Russia really worth it at this given moment in time? And the answer is no, absolutely not. Russia is not the main adversary of the United States. They're an adversary, but not the main one. China's the main adversary. They're the ones that are looking to dominate. And when you look at their Belt and Road Initiative, something that most people will never speak about, the moves China has been making over the last 20 years is frightening. They've taken over critical infrastructure in a variety of countries, including allies. And if you're a country and you don't control your critical infrastructure, are you really a sovereign nation? And the answer is no. And this is what is frightening, is everyone's missing the big picture because they're paying attention to a dying nation, which is Russia. Russia's a population of 120 million people. The population's aging. They're going to be facing population decline soon. The life expectancy in Russia is relatively low. The cost of living in Russia and the purchasing power parity is relatively low. They are not the threat I am worried about.
Yeah. Well, isn't it interesting that Putin met with Xi just before the invasion to supposedly get his kind of tacit consent to it? You're pointing out that this has been quite a distraction it's been a distraction for Russia and has exposed Russia, but it's been a big distraction for the United States, taking our eye off of China. So you got to wonder, China may have actually encouraged this, or for all we know, cooked this up jointly between the two of them.
Well, and that's the interesting thing. So everyone says that China and Russia are allies. They're not allies. China doesn't want to see a major superpower right on their border. You know, you worry about the superpower that's closest to you, not the one that's several thousand miles away. But yes, she was baiting Putin. He probably was saying behind the scenes, do it. You know, we'll help you out if we can, just do it. Why? Because it would be better to get the United States and Russia to destroy each other than for China to have to get involved militarily. If the United States and Russia go into a war with each other, who wins that war? Well, China wins. We destroy each other. It's similar to the World War II scenario. You know, you look at going into World War II, who were the superpowers? Britain, France, Germany, they were all declared the superpowers. Well, after World War II, what happened? Well, those superpowers destroyed themselves, allowing the United States and the Soviet Union to become the superpowers. Same thing holds true here. If the United States and Russia engage in a kinetic war with each other, we're both done. And China will be the superpower, the dominant superpower in the world. And so, yes, I do believe behind the scenes, she was encouraging Putin to do this. And I think that we fell for it hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, we fell for it. But then again, and then, by the way, there's also a lot of criticism to go around for the Biden administration to allow the invasion to happen to begin with. There's a pretty good argument that there's a reason why it didn't happen under Trump. But once it did happen, I think it's kind of hard to be too critical as to the administration's response. I think the amount of money spent seems a bit high to me. I would certainly agree with that. In fact, part of that is Congress's fault, though. I think that they gave an extra $10 billion beyond what Biden had approved. But
both Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah, but you know, there's been a lot of restraint also, though. We didn't do the no-fly zone, no U.S. troops in there, et cetera, no training of their troops, et cetera. So I don't know. From where I stand, not being no fan of the Biden administration, I think that we've mostly done the right thing in response.
To a certain degree, we actually were training their troops, the Ukrainian troops. It did come out that we were training them. As far as what Biden has done, I mean, the economic sanctions, if you wanted to hurt Russia, what would you do? Well, the number one thing you do is crash the oil market. You crash the price of oil. 50% of the Russian economy relies on oil and natural gas. If you crash the markets and you bring prices down by 50%, that means Russia would lose 25% of its GDP. You'd economically devastate them. That would have been a smart policy, but this administration is so thick-headed that they're not reversing course on oil and natural gas production. And so prices have skyrocketed. And who's gotten richer from it? Well, Vladimir Putin has, of course. So yes, some of the things as far as not doing the no-fly zone, I agree with. However, when it comes to announcing all the military equipment we've given them, when it comes to the amount of money we've given them, when it comes to some of the economic sanctions that were levied on Russia that didn't do anything except really hurt us, he's made a lot of missteps. And I think that we're going to look back and see that this was all preventable. And once it did start, there were other things that we could have done that would have been much more effective, like crashing the price of oil and natural gas.
Yeah. Yeah. You just wonder sometimes who's at the wheel of this White House. I mean, it just makes absolutely no sense. But you clearly have some major climate activists, Green New Deal, AOCers in there, because it makes no sense that Biden is not changing policy at all on that. And then when you look at the border, you must have some serious open border MFers in that White House, because Biden is just, this isn't the Biden that was senator for 30 years to have a totally open border like this. It is very scary as to who's really in charge.
It's insane. I mean, again, I've never seen anything like it. And for what? I mean, why do you want millions of people flooding over the border? Like, we have limited resources. We have a limited infrastructure. We already talk about how our infrastructure can't handle the grid systems, can't handle the electric loads that are being produced right now. And yet we're going to sit there and say 2 million people come right in. It doesn't make any sense. And I don't, part of the reason is that he wants this to become so not him, the Democrat Party, you know, let the system collapse and then people look to the government to give us more power to fix the problems we created in the first place. The other part of me says it's complete and utter incompetence and just listening to the loudest voices in the room. But none of these policies make sense. And I'm really shocked that nobody said, hey, get the gas prices lower or else we're going to get crushed in the midterms.
Yeah, no, they don't. They don't care. These people are ardent, ardent idealists. This is Bernie Sanders, basically. That's who the president is. That's what I'm convinced.
But you know the amazing part? Biden,
yeah.
They despise President Trump so much. You would think one of the reasons President Trump got elected was because of the border. You would think that they would hate President Trump so much that they'd say, listen, we can't have this open border situation because we don't want President Trump to come back. And yet they're rolling out the red carpet for President Trump to come back if he wants to.
Oh, yeah. That was his winning issue was the border. And the border is 10 times worse than when he originally ran. Hey, we got to leave it there. It's fun. Professor Nicholas Giordano, check out his podcast, the PAS Report podcast. Thank you so much, Nicholas. Appreciated the time.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, we'll be back with the final hour of the James Breslow Show on TNT Radio after the break.